making some pretty good progress there. I'm going to skip a little bit about the workshop formats. You know, we've presented this information before, but basically we try to schedule the workshops in advance, and before we hit the workshops, our firm tries to provide the group with some issue papers that gives them some background on the information, maybe some technical knowledge about what we're talking about, so that going into the discussion, we're not faced with a lot of group inertia on the topic, and we can have a good, lively discussion instead of trying to kind of get started. And I think that's worked out okay. How we go about the approach in general and overall is we've been working a lot on, at first, defining what the big issues are for us, and at this point, we're really trying to work through the issues, and we've called that this hypothesizing and iteration phase. And you know, we're definitely right in the middle of that. We're going to get to the point soon enough where we have some ideas that need to move forward for wider approval. A couple of things from workshop number one. We talked about some pretty weighty issues there, the obligation of service and the right to serve. That is to say, what is the mission for the regional entity? What is it going to do? For who? How? When? Where? And so forth. And the right to serve really relates to the exclusivity that should be granted to the proposed regional entity to work on water production in the region without competition. We came out of workshop number one with some pretty important consensus among the group that was there having the discussion. So this would be things that the folks at the workshop were more or less willing to agree to. Obviously, in order for an agreement to be signed, it has to go to the wider governing bodies, and that's not what's happening at the workshops. So I want to be careful as how we say we have consensus. We have it among the group in the workshops. That doesn't mean it exists everywhere. But we came out of workshop number one with a number of tenets that could be added to the obligation of service. I'm just listing these up here, and these are also available in the published minutes from these meetings, and we presented it last time, so they've been available for a number of weeks at this point. I can summarize this by saying that this obligation of service is quite strong. It basically says that the entity would be responsible for the water production in the region, and that it would need to meet all of the members' needs as long as the needs are made known in a reasonable time frame. And that's a pretty strong obligation of service. So whatever those water production needs are, the regional entity is signing up to meet them. As it relates to the right to serve, the exclusivity is also pretty strong. It says that the regional entity is going to be allowed to operate the water production here in the region as a single provider, and that the members, the signatories to the agreement, would only use the regional entity for those water production needs to the exclusion of anything else. So the members would not be allowed, once they signed on this agreement, to go out and construct their own water production facilities in competition with the regional entity. In workshop number two, we talked about how to finance such an entity, and we also talked a little bit about how to keep track of all the costs, revenues, expenses, and so forth. With respect to that second workshop, it was some consensus there that the regional entity should have the authority to issue revenue bonds pledged against its own revenues. In other words, they could finance all of those projects that are going to be needed to provide the capacity that's consistent with the obligation to serve. And what that meant for the group was there was sort of a twist there that instead of a 28E, we're probably talking about a 28F sort of agreement. And then we got into the second area, which was a discussion about a lot of seemingly mundane areas of accounting, but what it did is it provided us a lens to see whether or not this structure that we had in mind was really going to be helpful for us. Regarding the existing production capacity, we found that we can't just grant the board regional authority over all of these facilities and all of these people. That authority, to the extent it exists, has to be actual authority. Can't simply be bestowed. And we got to, for the existing water production, the regional entity can only really replicate or review the accounting information of others. So if it doesn't have the authority to originate these kinds of transactions, the best that it can do is kind of replicate or read or review that information. I think members of the group felt like that wouldn't give the entity quite enough independence. We got to workshop number three. What we had on the agenda there was to discuss the operational and planning authority for the regional entity. And you know, these three topics, the planning authority, the operational authority, and then even going back to this accounting, which would be something of a financial authority that we were talking about, all of them sort of coalesced to give us this sort of notion that the kind of authority that the group really envisions for the regional entity is stronger than what we had gone into the workshop thinking that we were trying to put together. What we came to in this discussion was that we realized that the regional entity would not likely have that authority needed in order to fulfill its obligation to serve without having authority for some of the water production assets and their operation. That authority needed to be real, it can't be ministerial. The discussion then turned to suspending some part of the guiding principles in order to discuss how that transfer of assets might occur. And we talked about this last night, I'll get to that in a minute, but the guiding principles are very clear about not transferring assets and not doing those kinds of things. However, the group came to these obstacles and they wanted to explore a little bit further what the transfer might look like and whether or not they could conceivably make that work within the guiding principles, at least in its spirit and intent. And so those guiding principles were sort of suspended for a while so that the group could start evaluating it. And as we ended this discussion on workshop number three, we had a couple of important ideas that came out of it. One involved sort of two ideas around asset transfer, and a second involved sort of an expansion of the current governance of the Des Moines Water Works Board of Trustees. But so, with respect to the first set of ideas, transfer of assets could be a path forward as we set the guiding principles to the side for just a moment. One option for that was transferring some of the water production assets, specifically those that had been contributed by the purchase capacity customers at some point in the past. Those were identified as the McMullen and Sailorville plants and the related infrastructure around them. A second option that came up during that discussion was a more inclusive transfer of assets that would be include Fluor as well. And I say all water production assets, and I think we're still looking at what that inventory would really be. Second idea was an expansion of the Board of Trustees, and in this idea, the board itself, the Des Moines Water Works Board of Trustees, would be expanded to some level. It would include members from the purchase capacity communities and others to provide more representation there for those interests, and that idea is also sitting on the table. But we did not talk about that one last night. What we did talk about in workshop four, and we'll be talking about again tomorrow night, is the valuation and transfer of assets if it were to occur. The idea was, is there a different way forward to accomplish a reorganization of the assets under the authority that would benefit ratepayers without causing financial harm? In other words, can we move the assets without hurting anybody? And we had a very good discussion last night about how this could work. There, we talked a little bit about different standards of value. Now, one of the things that we're sensitive to is that this entire discussion has happened a few years ago when this was being reviewed the last time. And what we wanted to do was not necessarily backtrack there and start from there, because that discussion didn't lead to any kind of agreement last time, but to go, if we were going to go back there, to take a look at it in a different perspective so that we might be able to move forward. What we talked about first last night was how you might apply a different standard of value to the entire situation and what that might mean. We talked about the difference between what fair market value is, a very technical definition of that, versus what fair value is. And even though there's only one word difference between those two terms, there is a very big difference in the way that they play out in evaluation exercise, and the difference can lead to different outcomes. So we talked about that for a while, and then we got into how we would apply some of these broader concepts into a different perspective for our particular situation. The key issues that we brought up were the idea of contributed versus owned equity, and the idea of subscribed versus reserved capacity. And I'll talk more about those here. The first topic was contributed versus owned equity, and we laid out for the group this couple of definitions, that owner's equity is the investment net of related debt attributable to the owners of the business assets. Right now, these are the Des Moines Water Works ratepayers that we're talking about. This is mostly the non-purchase capacity customers, although there's a little bit of a group overlap there. But owner's equity, if you can think of it, it is, with respect to existing assets, is mostly the Des Moines Water Works and Des Moines Water Works ratepayers, and not the purchase capacity customers. Contributed equity, on the other hand, comes from other parties. And even though Des Moines Water Works does own all of the assets, the equity for some of the assets has been contributed by mostly purchase capacity customers, although that's not 100%, it's most of it. That contributed equity is simply cash money that has been given to Des Moines Water Works to purchase some of the assets that are in the region. It's contributed because Des Moines Water Works ratepayers did not have to come up with the money either through paying for debt or paying directly with cash in order to buy those facilities. And so the idea of what is a contributed equity is an important one to distinguish. What we're trying to do in the regional sense is to take both of those types of equity and combine them into a regional entity. And so we talked about how that might occur. And that brings up the idea of subscribed versus reserved capacity. Subscribed capacity is the capacity that's already being used to provide service to the existing ratepayers, either those attached to the owner's equity or those attached to the contributed equity. So it doesn't matter where the equity came from. There's a part of the system that's already being used by the existing ratepayers, and we're achieving the public benefit that those facilities were intended for when they're providing service. At the moment, there's approximately 110 MGD of design capacity available in the system, and about 100 of that capacity is being used roughly in this proportion here, but not precisely. So that subscribed capacity is about 98 out of 110. And we've got about 12 that is reserve. That reserve capacity, of course, is the unused portion. And that's important because that 12 MGD is a sort of vital asset for the region, especially in the short run, because trying to grow at this point in time would be very difficult if you didn't have that reserve. We suggested an approach for both the subscribed capacity and the reserve. And with respect to the subscribed capacity, what we suggested the group to discuss last night was to simply contribute it to the regional entity. In other words, simply transfer it at its original cost, net of accumulated depreciation, therefore causing no impact whatsoever on existing ratepayers. So in doing this, keeping the cost intact as you move it from one place to the other, there is no need to change the cost structure for these assets, and therefore no need to have the rates go up or down as a result of moving it. We talked about why that was so last night. So that was the suggested approach for this subscribed portion. With respect to the reserve capacity, what's going on up here, we suggested taking a look at three possible alternatives and left room for anyone else who has some ideas about this, but we suggested three to try to get the group talking about this. One would be to contribute it and simply allow the region to subscribe that capacity and therefore spread the capital cost recovery for that 12 MGD across the entire region. Currently, that 12 MGD and all of the capital costs associated with it are paid for only by Des Moines Water Works ratepayers and not by anyone else. So the purchase capacity customers specifically do not pay for it. And that's an important aspect we'll see here in a moment. The second idea was to contribute that, but reserve some or all of the 12 MGD specifically for Des Moines. I'll talk about that in a minute. And then there was a third idea that would include selling, I've got that in quotes, the capacity, and then buying it back from the entity at a marked up value. That offers an interesting twist. I'm going to describe all three about as quickly as I can here without going too fast. The first idea involved contributing those assets in an unrestricted manner. So the reserve capacity, 12 MGD, gets contributed to the regional entity with no restrictions as to how it is used. And the capital cost recovery for it is then averaged across all of the demands in the region instead of the way it is right now, which only goes to the Des Moines Water Works ratepayers and not to the purchase capacity customers. So in other words, we've spread those costs out over a much wider group of users. So what might that look like right off the bat? Currently, there's about $13.6 million that's recovered for these assets in a given year in total. And right now, that actually splits up a little bit. It's about 9.6 for folks inside the Des Moines service area, and it's about 4 million for the purchase capacity customers. But if we combined it all together, which is what we would be doing if we follow this approach, we would end up with a cost per 1,000 gallons of about 94 cents. If you can see down here, that currently compares to something like $1.30 for the Des Moines customers and about 56 cents for the purchase capacity customers. So when you look at how this works right here, the cost of that reserve capacity getting spread out over more ratepayers causes the cost for the Des Moines ratepayers at least to fall all the way down to 94 cents. And that's exactly what we would expect to see in any kind of regionalization. It creates economies of scale. And this is a really simple and good example of how economies of scale work. We have a fixed cost. We're spreading it out against more units. We have a lower cost per unit as a mathematical result, and that's what we would hope to see from any kind of regionalization. Now, in the long term, one of the things that happens with this is the 12 MGD can be subscribed a lot faster because now we're making it available to a wider region. Right? So if we focus that 12 MGD inside of a small geographic area, the owners take the risk that it's going to be however long in order for growth to catch up and actually use that capacity. So we can't move down the curve here until we get the capacity used and useful for somebody. So right now, we would be here, for example. In the short term, if we were able to regionalize this, we would get to this 94 cent level pretty quickly, back overnight. And over a little bit longer period of time, as that capacity becomes more and more subscribed and more used across the region, you have the opportunity to get that down into the 85 cent range. That would be down in here. At that point, you need more capacity, you have to build it. Right? So the costs become different at that point. So that's idea number one. The second idea was take that reserve capacity, contribute it to the region, but some or all of that reserve would be restricted for the use of Des Moines only. And why would we use that particular approach? Well, it would be because that reserve has been carried by Des Moines Water ratepayers for quite some time. It's the most likely the least expensive increment of capacity that exists in the system, and it may be that there's a legitimate need, purpose for Des Moines to want to have priority access to it for its own growth. That's why it was offered as an idea. It doesn't do a whole lot for the cost. It sort of fails to regionalize a lot of that reserve capacity that I was talking about. It actually accomplishes a different goal. So instead of regionalizing it, it moves the asset, but it also reserves it for the use of Des Moines. And it won't produce the kind of average cost benefits that we were looking at before. The third idea was to essentially sell it and then buy it back at a marked up value. So you would sell it, you would have to agree on some kind of value for it, and then what would happen is the regional entity would acquire it. The cost of acquiring it would then be included in all the wholesale rates, which means that the ratepayers of Des Moines would end up buying use of that 12 MGD back at some kind of marked up value. I'll demonstrate that here in a second. What we proposed as a talking point was that that would be done through a promissory note of some kind, financed over, financed over some period of time. We just made an assumption of 30 years at 5%. We made some rough values for this 12 MGD to point out and illustrate the point. And it would be something in this range. Now, something on the numbers that you're seeing here that I want to make sure I say right now is that we pulled a lot of this from different locations. We had about a week and a half to put all of this together. So this is definitely not any kind of conclusion of value. It's not anything other than using some numbers that make some sense in order to demonstrate a concept. And so I don't want anyone to get the notion that somehow we've come up with what a value is and here's what's going to happen. That's not the case. All we're trying to do is illustrate how this might work and using some numbers that make sense, help us make sense of it. So as we're moving along here, this idea here would get us to about $3.7 million a year. Those annual payments would come from the entity to Des Moines, but they could also be paid out in credits and rates. And the way this works is a little bit different than the first idea, because we're marking up the value. So we had that 13.6 million, we would add the 3.7. That gets you only to $1.19 per thousand instead of 94 cents, for example. So that doesn't sort of pan out quite as well. But if you took that 3.7 million that would be paid out to Des Moines ratepayers, they could possibly use it as a credit for the Des Moines ratepayers, and that could get it down to something like 68 cents per unit. That's a possibility. And so that was what we discussed last night. Now, there were pros and cons with all of these. I would say for items number one and three, a lot of the pros for those were about the same. The reserve capacity ends up becoming subscribed more quickly. In other words, we don't have to carry it. Des Moines doesn't have to carry it. The region doesn't have to carry it for quite as long as we might otherwise expect, because as growth occurs, it can start using that capacity. That means we have units of demand that we can spread those costs out over more quickly if it were regional rather than more local. And so under both of those scenarios, that would be the case. Now under the second one, that wouldn't be the case. It would still be more localized because it would be committed to a smaller geographic area. The other pros are it removes this purchase capacity quote limits from the equation right now. For the purchase capacity customers, their contracts have a certain amount of capacity that's been purchased. If they exceed that, they pay more to use the capacity in the reserve. Right now, a lot of them view that as something of a limit that they don't want to exceed. And what this would do, it would take that 12 MGD and it would make it available to the region, so that limit would effectively disappear. And the use of that 12 MGD would be at the average cost that applies to everyone in the region. The average cost per unit, as we saw, would decrease for Des Moines customers. All else being equal, that could play out in those customers' rates, and it could play out very directly. On the con side, they would increase for the purchase capacity customers. However, the reason that they increase really is because it would open up that 12 MGD for use. Right, so it's actually not quite apples to apples there. The costs do go up, but they go up because there's a benefit being conferred. It establishes the regional entity with the assets to fulfill its obligation to serve, so it would have those assets under its direct management and perhaps ownership. It would then allow that entity to function in the ways that we sort of envisioned when we started talking about how do we keep track of our financial information? What is our operational authority? What is our planning authority? The regional entity would have a lot more direct authority over all of these things under both of these scenarios, actually all three of these scenarios. The last pro that I've listed here is the cost of curing any kind of operational capacity issues. Right now, the 110 MGD is the design level for all of this. It doesn't operate quite at that level right now. It's about 105. And getting that to 110 is important, but that cost of getting there is quantifiable. It can be done. In other words, we would call that curable. And, you know, we looked through the long-range plan and found several projects that were intended to do exactly that. It's a quantifiable number. Now, if this is regionalized, the entire region would be paying for those upgrades, if you will, to get it back to 110 MGD. And if it's not regionalized, well, then that becomes a more localized cost. On the con side, what we saw is the rate for purchase capacity customers can go up under number one and three, but it goes up for a reason, as I described, because there's a benefit that's being provided there that isn't currently being provided. I think under a couple of these, we can get more or less complex in how it works. I think the first one is actually probably the easiest of the three. You simply put the assets into the regional entity and let the economies of scale work for you. That's really the answer on number one. Number two will be more complex because we have to keep track of who has priority over that next 12 MGD. And number three is a little more complex because we've got a promissory note involved and we've got to figure out how to manage that and make sure that that works. It's a little bit more complex for that reason. And the third one in particular has a different twist on it that shouldn't be ignored, and that is if it's going to be a sell and buyback proposition, that the parties are still going to need to agree to a value. And you know, that's been difficult, and it is difficult. It doesn't matter who's talking about it or why. Agreeing to a value on something that's so important for the public use is always going to be a very difficult discussion. It would require that occurred. The other two don't. The other two simply require that we move the assets as they are today with their characteristics as they are today. Coming up, so last night, we basically got through to presenting these three ideas and having about 20 minutes of discussion about them as we ran out of time at 6 p.m. The idea for Thursday is to continue so that we can have a wider and more robust discussion about these ideas and other ideas that others would like to bring to the table. So that will take up workshop number four. Future workshops, you know, we had a schedule laid out for all of this. This all kind of took a turn on us as of the end of the last discussion, workshop number three, when we wanted to start talking about valuation. And so we're going to carry through this discussion here for as long as the group needs, and then we'll rejoin some of those topics. We may end up changing some of those topics because we need to in order to get us to where we need to go. So I don't have those identified precisely right now, but we will be identifying them as we go through these workshops coming up. And those will be scheduled at least a week or two in advance so that people know what to expect. I had a lot of stuff to go through today. I'm sorry for taking up more time than I normally have, but I know I went through it pretty quickly. But I'm happy to answer questions if you have any.
So, Bill, we make this available on the website? Okay.
We do.
Okay.
Several websites, including one Waterworks, right. And one.
There's a lot of information in there. I'm sure people would like to digest it and think about it. Questions, comments, either from anybody on the board or the public. I guess one from me, the excess 12 MGD, based on the 40-year plan, how quickly would that be used up?
I don't remember precisely, Mayor, but it's relatively quickly, within the decade.
Okay.
And obviously there are some assumptions made about growth rate, and if growth occurs either more quickly or less quickly than those assumptions, then that 10 years shrinks or expands, but it's basically 10 years.
10 years. Is there additional capital investment that needs to be made to produce those,
yes,
12 million gallons?
Yes.
How much?
I'm sorry, the 12 million that he's,
yes,
having as a reserve? No.
No.
Is okay. My understanding. And Jason, you can,
okay,
respond to that, but certainly the plan moving forward has a number of capital contributions over the next 23 years.
But short-term wise, theoretically, there'd be no capital investment to produce that additional 12 million.
I think that's generally true,
okay,
Steve. Yes.
Okay.
I think maybe the only thing is we said that there's about 105 that's operating at right now, and the design capacity is 110.
Okay.
There is repair in there to get you up to 110, and it's, we don't, you know, we did a very quick review of the long-term plan to try to vet what those projects are. We came up with a number, but I don't think we're qualified to tell you what that is. That should be an engineering assessment.
Now, the 12 MGD, is that spread among the three plants? Okay.
And if I may, on the issue that we're talking about, 110, 105 MGD, certainly I think I made clear last night, and I'll make clear today if necessary, that I would view the number too small, because it should include West Des Moines, it should include Altoona, Polk City, and other regional production assets.
So essentially, the notion, Bill, would be if we're going to regionalize it, based on existing facility, it needs to be all of them.
Yes, sir. All in.
I think something that we need to do probably tomorrow is, if you go back to the guiding principles, we spent quite a bit of time defining obligation and right, but we never define regional. I mean, what is regional mean? It sounds like it means different things to different people. I mean, we're either regional or we're regional, but this or that, you know, is not part of it. And I think that we need to kind of come to some understanding of what everybody's idea of being regional is. Because I think that makes it, well, a good example is that reserve. One of the options is to restrict that to Des Moines. Well, is that being regional? And in the other option, number one, I think it was, where it's unrestricted and however you divvy that up, I don't know, but that's regional. But we had a discussion, or a brief discussion last night, about what Bill was talking about as to the entire water production resource. Is that regional, or is it made up of several different regions? So to me anyway, unless I'm the only one that thinks that, but I think it'd be good to spend a little bit of time just discussing what we think the definition of regionality is.
Well, it'd be nice to get a list. I mean, a number of people have reached out to Grimes, and I don't think any of us have heard from them. But it'd be nice to get a list from all the regional groups to say, assuming we can come to an agreement on how to structure this, who's in? So we know. My guess is right now, all the central Iowa cities, maybe with the exception of Grimes, would be in, but it'd be nice to have that list so we actually know.
Mayor, do you know if Grimes will be at the meeting today, the presentation with all the city managers? Because that might be a good time to, yeah, for us to reach out to everyone and say we want to better define, yeah, what the region is and who's in.
Jody, does Kelly Brown come to those meetings?
Infrequently.
Infrequently. Okay, so what Sue's mentioning is some of us got invited to come to this regional city manager group today to talk about updates to what we're doing, and Jody, there was like 29 people invited. So is it existing city managers, assistant city managers, and retired city managers that get together periodically to talk about issues?
Yes.
Okay. So they're meeting today in West Des Moines City Hall. A number of us were asked a month or two ago to come to their meeting today just to give them an update. So if Kelly's there, I guess we can ask her again. But I don't know the best way to get a list, a commitment. I don't know if who should actually reach out to everybody and say, are you in or you out? If we can come to an agreement, are you in or you out? To find out who really says, we don't care what you come up with, we're going to do our own thing. Right now, my feeling is it's Grimes. But
I did speak to Mayor Armstrong Monday, and I brought up the issue, and they definitely have interest in it. Tom definitely has interest in participating.
And I talked to him on Friday, and it was the same kind of communication.
Yeah.
I encouraged him. He said, yes, they're interested. And I suggested that he follow up and get involved. I mean, contact someone and get involved.
I mean, he asked me right when we started this, should Grimes be involved? And I said, yes, you should be. So no one's shown up, and he didn't run for re-election, so that's why I'm concerned that they thought about it 2 months ago, but yet no one's coming to these meetings. But I think we ought to ask them, are you interested or you're not?
Well, I'll call them after this.
I mean, we might see him tonight, too.
See him tonight and remind him that Kelly can get to the meetings today. That would be a good time.
Yeah, at lunch. But I think if we can at least get the list of all the folks that said, okay, if we can come to an agreement, we're in. And then we can kind of drill down into more of your.
Yeah, but then I think once that happens, and then once that we can come up with an agreed upon definition of regionalism, then whatever direction this takes, I think we have to hold it up and look at it and see if it fits our definition of regionality or not. And if it doesn't, or if it doesn't fit the definition that we prescribe, what's the benefit of, what are we gaining by doing it?
In the long run, if we can't produce water together more economically than people can do it on their own, it's going to fall apart. So we've kind of complicated a bit because we started out with the notion this 47.5 million gallons we're going to have to produce in the future. How do we regionalize that to, does it make sense to maybe start with ownership of assets today? Maybe at the end of the conversation, the answer is no, it doesn't make any sense. And we go back to, but the original notion was, doesn't it make sense that over the next 50 years it's more economical for all of us to build this capacity versus segmenting it?
Another thing I think would be helpful, and I'm not quite sure the best way to do it, maybe it's just somebody puts together paper that shows how it's done instead of taking time at a workshop to really go through it. But and what got me thinking, and what it is the basic understanding, I guess, of how rates are currently figured. And what got me thinking about this was that 12 MGD reserve that's built into the system that nobody's using, that apparently Des Moines ratepayers are picking up that, what was it, $1.03 or whatever it was. You know, just how, in a 10,000 foot view, you know, we don't have to get into the weeds or anything, but how are those different rates paid for, or calculated? I mean, just so we have an understanding moving forward of why there's a difference in different area or different customers.
I think the other thing we need to validate, and I'm not sure the best way to do it, and we don't have to have it down to the penny, is this notion that in the long run we're all better off economically doing it together versus in the short run, Urbandale said, okay, it's cheaper for us to do it on our own. How do we validate that for our customers? Because again, their costs may go up in the short term. Seems to me we have to validate to them that over the long run you're going to be better off. How do we validate that under this whole structure? I mean, we need to do that in order for us to say this is the right thing long-term to do. Otherwise, some of our customers are going to say, all we're doing is subsidizing somebody else, and why do we need to do that?
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if we got an answer today, but it's something we need to get our arms around because we actually need to somehow be able to document that.
Parking lot's getting pretty big, isn't it, Jason?
I agree. That has to be resolved.
Might have to extend your agreement for a couple of years.
Part of taking on to your comments about looking back to line regionalization, I think we do need to continue the conversation about which assets are included, whether West Des Moines is included as truly a regional asset or not. Since it only provides water within our corporate boundaries, we have a difference of opinion. We need to keep talking about.
And just to build on,
I think Altoona feels the same way.
Yeah, and just to build on what Karen's saying, if you are using 6 million gallons, but you have the ability to produce 10, do we take that additional 4 and move it into this additional capacity available for the regional entity? I don't know. We haven't, but I thought about that as we left yesterday. If we're trying to take all excess,
the way we're fitting in. Correct me, technical folks over there, the way we're structured today, we cannot supply water outside of our corporate boundaries.
Right.
It does not go out, and then we would have blending and all kinds of regulatory issues if we're pushing our water out into your system. So that's why we feel like we're completely isolated and don't. We are not a regional asset. And I think Altoona would
say that. Well, that's when we use purchase capacity because of the water type, it's the blending issue more than anything. DNR requirements, extra reporting, and things like that.
So I do think that is something that we need to continue to talk about.
I can't answer for Altoona, but in West Des Moines, we don't hold reserve capacity. We wouldn't have any to take outside of our corporate boundaries, which is why we have purchase capacity to make up that excess. So we don't have that hypothetical situation. Altoona may be different. I don't know.
Depends on the time of year.
That's true.
It's like everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, this continues to be a huge issue. I saw in this morning's paper all these western states. They're drawing down their water source faster than it can be replenished, which is a train wreck. Again, I mean, I'm glad we're having the conversation. We need to figure it out, and it's going to continue. It's the right thing to do, but it's going to continue to give us an advantage. But people are struggling with this whole notion all around the country. Other questions, comments, discussion, either from the board or anyone that's here from the public?
I'd like to say a few words. Anyway, first of all, John Hollebrand here in Urbandale. And I'm going to hit on two topics here today. First of all, I was keyed in on some of the things you just said here. There's been a lot of talk about where we're going to be at 40 or 50 years from now. And the concern that I have had, and maybe you got all these water experts in the room to fill me in a little bit, is the Jordan Aquifer. And whether or not I need to have it clarified for me whether or not this is a finite resource, meaning that it can be drawn down, that's what Eric was talking about, or whether it's something just renews. Okay, if it's something just renews itself, then no worries. But if it's something that we draw down on, it's going to be exhausted, that's what he's talking about here, by then we can get some major problems here that I haven't talked about very much. So what is the plan? I suspect that the answer is that this is something that gets drawn down. So I guess a couple questions here. First of all, fundamentally, what's the plan 50, 40, 50 years from now? Are we just going to kick this can down the road? Or what's the scheme? I haven't heard anything about this. I'd like to hear about it. Okay, you're talking about regionalization and who all's in, who's out. I guess I'd ask the question, is this Jordan Aquifer, is it like a lake? Or if so, how big? Or is it like a river? Okay. If we are concerned about exhausting that particular resource, then that means that we're going to have to stop drilling these ASRs. We're going to have to regulate. This is something nobody likes. Mayor Garrett mentioned the other day, and he's absolutely right. We get two things here in the Midwest to sell, power and water. Well, maybe we're going to have to back off on selling this water aspect here. Reality. Nobody likes this, but maybe it's the way it is. Say this for the sake of the argument, this is a lake of some sort, however big. Okay. Then, if we're going to control this deal, that means that everybody, whether they want to be in it or not, is going to be in it. We can't be having people, part of us being in it, and restricting our drilling of ASRs and pulling water out of the aquifer. If Ames, for example, or Grimes or somebody else, can go right ahead and suck all they want. They're going to have to be in it. If you guys want this thing to work, they're all going to have to be in it. Maybe it's going to take legislation to get them in there. This is a great scene here. I mean, we have enough problems here agreeing amongst the volunteers now to get some conscripts in here. That'll just be great. You know, they're going to be sour and mad and they're not going to cooperate about anything. But I think that's just part of the reality, is you need to decide, from a geotechnical, under the ground thing, okay, how big an area are we going to control? Okay, get that decided. And that means everybody that lives over the top of that is in, whether they want to be or not. Okay. A point I'll just demonstrate the possible severity of this situation. I don't know if you folks know where New Virginia, Iowa is at, about 10 miles north of Osceola, just in the east of Interstate 35. A gentleman that I know was mayor down there for many years. Okay. They were using well water, drilled down to an aquifer. You get all horribly polluted. DNR and the Department of Health were riding their water treatment plant relentlessly about crappy water. So anyway, they finally resolved. They joined the Warren County Rural Water Association. Well, what do you know? Warren County Rural Water Association is a customer of Des Moines Water Works. You open the tap in New Virginia, Des Moines Water Works water runs out. that's, I think, is a harbinger of things that could come. Pretty grim situation. Anyway, if you're going to, then I think we get to the next point here. If we're going to restrict this easy, cheap move of moving down these ASRs, then that means we're back to thinking about surface water. And this means big bucks that we're not currently spending. It means more dams, it means more reservoirs, and lots more pipe. But you're not just going to be able to sink a hole in the ground. And if you live in, for example, let's pick out like Grimes or someplace like that, instead of sucking water out of the reservoir, that water can have to come by a pipe or someplace. This all takes money. Anyway, I'm not hearing a discussion. I'd like to see that discussion. The other thing, the other point that I want to ask here, our moderator, okay, the Moines Central Iowa area is not the most, surely not the only place that's got this problem. I mean, there's all kinds of other cities where there's a central city and then there are satellites and then they start out with a central water thing. There's other places that got this problem, which can't be wrong. I'd like to hear some examples. What, how did other people resolve this? How did it turn out? Anyway, that's all I got to say. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, John. So the basis of John's main question is, what's the source of the water that we're all using and what's the future capacity of that source?
I can speak a bit to the Jordan Aquifer, because it's one of our resources in West Des Moines. And it does recharge. It recharges at a rate far slower than where some areas are withdrawing it. And so you see localized, significant issues with the Jordan. Here in the metro, I say we're good stewards of the resource, and so we don't see that as much as you would in the Marion area in particular. But it's something that the Iowa DNR monitors very closely. We in West Des Moines just received a new permit and have just drilled a new Jordan. I believe Altoona is very similar.
We're on the Jordan and we upgraded one of our wells.
Okay, and to do that you had to modify your permit and go through a fairly extensive modeling effort. Their geologic services within DNR modeled the area before they would allow us to withdraw. And if it gets to a point where they have issues with the drawdown, we wouldn't obtain the permit or they would reduce our allocation. So there are areas that have issues. The metro is not an area of extreme concern. That being said, we can't put many more eggs in that basket. And I would suspect that as we grow, we would be looking primarily at surface or alluvial, something that's far easier to recharge and obtain. So it's being monitored. As we grow, we're probably not going to use that extensively.
I think otherwise too, you alluded to the ASR thing. The ASR thing does go into the Jordan, but they're not in a theoretical sense, they're not taking water out, they're putting water into it, storing it, and then taking that back out. So they're not, net result is they're not depleting the Jordan, they're actually just storing it down there and then bringing it back out. So it's a little different scenario.
Okay. And I wouldn't want to take Jason, who is really the subject matter expert's thunder and expertise, and divert it here, but you'd asked about other communities, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Cincinnati. Are a couple communities that come to mind, Denver, where Jason is from, and every local community adds its own color and texture to these kind of discussions, but ultimately, in our business, the movement is towards regionalization. There's a lot of complexities you're seeing even in our context here in doing that, but the economies of scale and the long-term sustainability issues necessarily come into play to look at it more regionally than individual balkanization of local water systems.
So Bill, the three regional facilities that Des Moines has, what's the source water for those three?
Generally, Steve, we're surface water providers. There's a little bit of, we're a little dimension of alluvial zones. There's a hybrid between surface and groundwater that we draw from also, but we're surface water providers, which as you and I have talked about before, means essentially our water sources are rechargeable. They recharge when we have precipitation upstream, obviously. That's a lot different, in my view, from tapping glacial water. They recharge, but not at the rate in which it's withdrawn generally. So that's a huge issue for us from a climate change and sustainability issue. I know that Graham Gillette talked about at the podium, water resource management, a couple sessions ago. And obviously, that's a significant concern for us. Des Moines made the decision 150 years ago to be a surface water provider, not a groundwater provider. Certainly, a lot of the science and demographics have changed since then, but ultimately, we still think that's the wise choice, even though realistically, you know, we have surface water quality problems far more so than we have surface water quantity problems in Central Iowa.
And does the DNR, do they monitor the surface water availability as much as they do the well system?
The issue of recharge and availability is less important to the DNR on the surface water issue than it is on the groundwater, but you can certainly get into some water rights issues.
Okay.
When you build a number of plants, as an example, on the Raccoon River, it's a zero-sum game.
Right.
Obviously, there's only so much water available on the river.
But theoretically, entities have to go and get permission and put together modeling. Someone just can't go and randomly start
Correct.
Drawing water out.
Correct.
Other questions, comments?
Is Warren County a 100% customer?
I'm sorry. Warren Water is a wholesale customer, a purchase capacity owner of Des Moines Water Works, but there are communities within Warren County that are not part of Warren Water.
But they don't produce their own water.
Yes, I'm sorry if that was the question. They're not a producer.
Yeah.
Xenia is.
Yeah, for instance, Indianola's on their own water.
Correct. But New Virginia, as an example, would be a customer of ours through Warren Water, but Warren Water, again, just to make clear, does not produce any water. Xenia, as an example, does produce some water and is still a wholesale customer of ours, a little bit more complicated.
Mayor, here a separate topic, but as the government policy chair for the partnership, we were talking about definitely a regionalization issue here, and the partnership covers that. I do want to let everyone know that at least in the draft, which is going to be board on Friday for the partnership, supportive regionalization is included in the draft document. And I would also encourage everyone here to consider being at the partnership legislative luncheon, where all of the priorities will be released on November 30th. You can sign up online. It's 11 to 1 o'clock. There will be a legislative panel talking about what's coming up in this session, so just wanted to make sure everyone knows. I believe we have strong support from the partnership in our efforts, and I think that speaks to your question of how do we make sure we have everyone in the partnership or in the region involved.
Right, and the partnership was a very active player in the whole DART governance process. Between part of the funding and Jay Byers sat on the governance committee. I think the partnership has elevated their game in the last couple of years when it comes to these kind of issues, which I think is good because now it's more the business community involved too. And all the elected people need to hear from their business constituents on what they think they need to be pursuing. All right, anything else for the good of the order today? All right. We will stand adjourned. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody, and we will be back here on Wednesday, November 29th.